everybody. Welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Grow Yourself from the Inside Out, where our mission is really just to help people, guess what? Grow from the inside out. And so I've got really, you know, I want to say a friend. He is a friend. I've known him for a long time, but honestly, I'll just say it. He's going to cringe as he hears this because he's a humble man, but he's really one of the smartest people that I know when it comes to human dynamics. Mm-hmm. He's put together this model, which he will explain. He calls it the change grid. And he'll explain a little bit about that. But I have been searching here and fro for somebody to talk about the flow state. And, you know, because I knew him more about his work in the change grid, I didn't really think about it. And suddenly I was watching one of his recent videos, and we'll tell you where to find that, on YouTube. And he was talking about the flow state. And I said, why didn't I think of T a long time ago? So I met T many, many years ago. As a matter of fact, I attended one of his, and in fact, myself and Jane, my wife and business partner, as well as one of our employees, Ashley Crow at the time, we went out to San Francisco, and I've been there to two of his, and I think this is the one, and it was at the same time that Michael Jackson died. I remember we were all sitting around, and it popped up on my screen. A friend of mine said that he had passed, and so... But that's not what I remember about the workshop. What I remember about the workshop is really, in some ways, this mind-blowing understanding of human dynamics in the way that T presents it. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm truly excited about it. We have already agreed up front that there will be multiple interviews here. So I'm going to say that on camera so that everybody knows it. And I'll just give you this little blurb, and then I'm going to introduce him and bring him into the screen here. So I would just say his name is T. Falcon Napier. He's an internationally recognized human development expert specializing in sales, leadership, and change management. He is the founder of the Institute for Productive Tension, and we're going to ask him about that, an organization that researches the role of productive tension in human performance. So everybody, welcome my friend and colleague, T. Falcon Napier. T, wow, so great to have you here. I'm truly excited. I'm literally just trying to hold myself back from sounding like I'm like a groupie or something like this. So yeah, welcome to Grow Yourself.
I appreciate the introduction, Kevin. Thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. I know, you know, you're in Arizona now, right? Yeah. But listen, just for the audience, as I always like to do, you know, just tell us a little bit about who you are, and please, of course, mention Linda, your wife and business partner, but tell us, who is T. Falcon Napier?
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of a challenging question to answer because I'm not entirely sure who I am, but I can certainly tell you bits and pieces of how I arrived where I am today. I started this work when I was in my early 20s. And at that time, I was living in Ann Arbor, Michigan, home of the University of Michigan, and a whole lot of professors who fancy themselves as consultants when they're not teaching. And so here I am saying, like, you know, I've got these ideas, I've got these thoughts, I've got this kind of model starting to happen in my head, and I really want to bring it to the attention of people that it can help. But there's just 20-some-odd-year-old me up against this educational behemoth. And I'm going, like, what chances do I have in a town like Ann Arbor to even find my first client? Wow. And so I did a couple of things that opened a couple of doors. But the thing that probably did it the most was this tool that I created, the Change Grid. And I'll tell everyone a little bit of background about how the Change Grid came to be in just a second. But bottom line, I wanted to talk to people who were already using some sort of psychometric tool. So whether they were using the DISC profile or Myers-Briggs or whatever was, you know, in its heyday at the time, yes, people were really using a lot of these psychometric tools. And I said, okay, I would like to interview your students as they are leaving your presentation. And so they said,
Interesting.
give it a whirl. And so I asked him, I said, I only have two questions for you. The first question is, what did you test out to be? And the second question is, how accurate do you think that really is? And what I heard them say over and over again is, oh, I tested out to be a whatever. I tested out to be a whatever. And they started to like hold themselves and frame themselves by whatever that identifier happened to be. And I believe that's inherently problematic. So that was always kind of rubbing me the wrong way. I thought like, well, you know, it's interesting. I can't pass up a personality test. You put one in front of me, I promise you, I will fill it out. And I think most people do as well because their favorite subject is themselves. And so, of course,
right.
People are like, all right, let's see how great I am today. And so,
that's right.
So I thought like, whatever, how quickly are people willing to label themselves because of some experience they had? But the real important question was the second one. How accurate do you feel that really is? And what I heard over and over and over and over again was, well, I can certainly see how I turned out to be a whatever.
Interesting.
But I really think I'm all of these things depending on the situation. And those were the four words, depending on the situation, depending on the situation, that ultimately led me to say, we need to stop looking at the people and start looking at the situations.
Yes, makes sense. I get it.
And so I put together a tool that it has come to be labeled as the world's only client-driven, activity-specific coaching and management tool. And so this tool that I put together, I didn't create it entirely from scratch. I can give someone, if they're having trouble falling asleep at night, I can send them a paper that will explain how this model actually evolved. So basically, the Change Grid is the result of combining over 400 different models of human behavior into a single model.
Wow.
And how that came to be, why I felt compelled to do that work, is because of this little truth about me. I'm the kind of person who has always been fascinated by people who are fascinated by people. The people themselves, I genuinely don't find all that interesting. But the people that are fascinated by people intrigue me, because what they do is put together a model of some sort that helps to explain whatever aspect of this creature we call a human is actually operating from. And so some might be looking at personality and others might be looking at temperament and others might be this and this and suitability for this and that. But the bottom line is they are all trying to add depth of understanding to this entity we refer to as a human being. They're just coming at it from their own little angle for their own little purposes, whatever they happen to be. So I said, you know what? I'm not really interested in creating a model that competes with anything. What I want to do is pick up where those models leave off. And so all of those models, whatever personality test you ever take, I promise you, at the end of that experience, a question is going to arise. And that question is going to be, now what? So
yes.
Yay, I turned out to be a whatever. Okay,
yes,
yay me. Now what? Well, now what is answered by a series of developmental opportunities, certain behavioral sorts of things that someone needs to work on. And so I said, I want a tool that helps us look at each of those specific growth opportunities or each of those specific situations, each of those specific goals, and see if I can get the answers to a couple of really useful questions that as a human development professional, or if I was a manager or a therapist or whatever,
yes,
I would find useful. And so this change grid actually is designed to answer four questions for the respondent at the activity specific level. And those are, how ready is this person to do whatever it happens to be? The second question is, how engaged are they in doing it? You and I are both very capable of doing all sorts of things that we do not find engaging.
Amen.
And so just because someone has the ability to do something or has the readiness to do something does not mean that in their head they've gotten on board, that they said,
that's
like,
right.
How am I getting sucked into this? I don't want to do this.
Right.
Yes, I'm really good at it. I no longer
yes.
wish to do it. And so engagement is a very separate question from this idea about readiness. And I think anyone who's running a business recognizes that they are wall to wall with people who have been fully trained, ready to the nth degree, except they just aren't engaged. in doing? That's
Yes.
a very different
That's
question.
a yes. That's a big
Now,
topic. Yep.
the third question that the Change Grid is designed to answer is how likely is this individual to actually follow through and do what needs to be done? And so we can say the Change Grid is descriptive, it is also very predictive. But the fourth and most important question in all the kind of work that we do is what type and level of support is this individual going to require in order to get that activity to turn out the way they want them to? And from there, we could develop coaching plans, training plans, whatever is the appropriate remedy for whatever's in their way. So that's the Change Grid. On the one hand, it's a very simple, practical, easy to approach kind of a tool. And on the other hand, it's going to open up insights that are going to pull you into a depth of thinking that you may never have even wanted to get involved with, but it's there.
Yes, and you personally took me through one. I don't know if you know if you recall, and I remember the big shift in my thinking, because what you're saying is absolutely true. Even without my experience, having taken DISC profile and Myers-Briggs and all the rest, I guess I'm kind of like you. I think there's value in all of them to some degree. I mean, to me, just any form of self-reflection is a good thing.
I agree.
But you're exactly right that there's a plenty that's left out, and there's a lot of questions that I would always have. And when you took me through this process, you helped me understand, and I think I recall your words because of what you just said about it sounds like, Kevin, there's a lot of things that you don't want to do. And he said, you can do one of two things, if I recall. You can change yourself or you can change your environment. And
That's
what
it.
you,
Those are the
and
two
that's
possible.
right. And that's what you, and that's what I rounded off to was, yeah, I really loathe doing these things. And so therefore, I probably need to go out and get somebody else to help me
Right.
that
Because
will
what's
do
the
it.
chances of us getting you to unload those activities?
Exactly. And it didn't happen.
Right.
So, this is fascinating. We want to eventually get around to this discussion about the flow state, but I also would you speak a little bit about the tension management piece? I think it's one of the most fascinating, and honestly, when I first heard you talk about it, I went, wow, that makes so much sense. And I congratulate you because I think it sounds to me like part of this came from your desire to really help people understand the things that would make them change, as opposed to just spewing out academia, and that all academics can understand, but the rest of the world can't. So would you talk just a little bit about that?
So this any discussion about tension has to begin with a what I would say, it's not so much it requires me to confront someone's current thoughts around the word tension. Through
Good.
no fault of their own, when most people hear the word tension, they think of a stressful situation. And certainly, stress is a level of tension, but it doesn't begin to tell the whole story. So, the best way for me to kind of illustrate what tension is would be to have all the listeners to envision for a moment that they are holding a rubber band between their fingers in such a way that the rubber band, you're holding the ends, obviously, the rubber band is kind of drooping in between. Now, we would look at that and say, well, how much tension is there in that rubber band? And the layperson would say, oh, there's none. But the science person would say, oh, we could measure it. We could measure it. But we go like, nah, there's no tension there. As we start to move the ends of this rubber band further and further apart, what's happening to that system? What's happening to that rubber band? Well, there is an amount of tension, an amount of energy that is now being created and contained inside of that system.
Yes.
Now, that tension can end up getting to be so high that we know if we keep pulling the ends further and further and further apart, this rubber band is going to snap. And when it snaps, all of that energy that the system contained is just going to be released into the environment and forget about it. However, if I take that exact same stretch rubber band And I decide, instead of holding it this way, I decide to point it at somebody or something. I have just created a weapon. And now I can direct that energy in order to achieve whatever the outcome happens to be. It generally involved my little brother's head. Right. So, you know, that's all. You got to kind of remember that tension is about energy. It's the amount of energy someone has around something. And when there's too much energy, that can be a problem. And when there's too little energy, that can also be a problem. Right.
I know, you know, because I've gone through your program and I've followed you for a long time, I know where you're going with it all. But that said, I'm tempted to say that those who are listening are going, oh, wow, I know where this is going, because it makes so much sense.
Right.
Please keep going.
we can draw a direct relationship between the level of tension that an individual is experiencing and the level of productivity they're likely to generate or whatever. But we need to add our third definition to it. We haven't really labeled the definitions, but the third definition is that tension is defined as the level of physical, emotional, and intellectual activity a person has going on at any given moment in time. So the more we can get your emotions to be engaged, the more we can get your problem-solving skills engaged, the more we can get you physically into motion or whatever, there's going to be a corresponding increase in the level of productivity that that person can experience. But we know this, if someone has too much emotional energy, too much physical pressures placed upon them, too big of a puzzle to try to solve, they can end up escalating up into stress. And the moment someone's in stress, the level of productivity takes an immediate nosedive. And so there ends up being, along this little curve of tension versus productivity, a level of tension that equals maximum productivity. And we, of course, have names for all these sorts of things. We might get to them a little bit later. But the principle is that if I want to get the greatest level of productivity out of myself or out of others, I need to obey the only rule we have, which is pay attention to tension. If they are not being productive, I mean, in all likelihood, every listener on this call has got some sort of goal they set for themselves many moons ago that they might have made some progress toward, but they just aren't there. Well, why aren't you there already? The reason why you're not there already is because the level of there's a couple of obstacles, but the biggest one is that you don't have enough tension to do anything about it. So that ultimate level of tension where someone will take immediate definitive action, where they'll actually change, we refer to as the threshold of activation.
Wow.
And I can give your listeners a very easy way to remember, to understand what the threshold is all about. So here we go. You wake up in the middle of the night, and you think to yourself, because that's the only way thoughts work, you think to yourself, I have to pee. Do you immediately jump out of bed and head to the bathroom? No. You lay there and this internal kind of debate occurs. How badly do I need to go? Yeah. How cold is the floor?
I really don't want to get up.
Yeah. I really don't want to get up. Can I do blah, blah, blah. And so you decide to go back to sleep. Well, 30 minutes later, you wake up again and your brain says, you gotta pee, you gotta do it. And now you hit the threshold of activation, you get out of bed and you go take care of business. So the threshold of activation can often be understood as the level of disturbance at which someone finally takes definitive action.
Wow.
So we got to hit that threshold. And our threshold is different for different sorts of things. But if I'm just shy of the threshold, I may do nothing. If in other situations, if I'm shy of the threshold, I may make some progress, but I'm not going to get all the way to where I really want to go. You see, change only occurs when someone says enough. And so if there's something outside of you that's happening and you've just said, I've tolerated this long enough, that word enough says I'm at that threshold enough already.
Wow.
And similarly, when you've got something that's happening inside of you, some personal growth thing that you want to be doing, whatever it happens to be, the truth is, if you're not changing, it's because you do not find your current situation troublesome enough to bother doing anything definitive to change it. Everyone needs to soak in that for a second and realize the truth therein. If you, in your head, intellectually know, I would be better off if I did this or that or whatever, but you aren't really doing that, well, I can either say, well, because people are stupid, or I could say they're smart. They just don't have enough tension to compel them to do what needs to be done. So we need to find a situation disturbing enough. We need to be able to hit that point where we say enough in order for changes to occur.
This is so fascinating. I can think about just a million things, even down to the person that wins the lotto and starts spending like crazy, and they don't change their ways until they're dead broke. And suddenly they go, oh gosh, I got to change my ways.
Exactly.
But I'm dead broke. And then there's others maybe who recognize that a little bit earlier and make some changes. So to your
That's
point,
right.
that threshold or that, and I want to just say one more thing before you go on. And that is that you would agree, I think, T, that, you know, that what comes with this is a level of self-awareness that you recognize as a human beings, your strengths and your weaknesses.
Yes, that's correct.
And that, you know, and that you accept some level of it, like, you know, my recognition of certain things that I know I should do, I know I have to do, but I loathe them and I procrastinate because of that.
Yep.
And so something's got to change.
Yeah. And that's all evidence of a tension management issue. And so, in order for us to be the best us we can be, we need to get really good at monitoring and managing our own level of productive tension. Mm-hmm. And then we need to think about what's the world we're in. I need to be able to have some impact, some influence. I need to be able to do whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing. In order to do that effectively, I need to be able to monitor and manage other people's levels of productive tension as well. And so this is really a life skill. And at a certain level, it's something we all know natively. It's something that's just inherent in the human existence. I mean, I didn't create tension. It's always been here. We were just looking at it and labeling it and turning it into a system that people can approach and duplicate. Anyway, we talk about these levels of tension. So let's go ahead and do a
please.
Real quick orientation of the levels of tension. Truth be told, tension exists on an infinite continuum. And so there are countless stopping points along that continuum where you can stop and look. Nobody wants to learn that. And so we have to make it a little bit more approachable, break it down so it's a little more practical. And so we have ended up identifying five levels of tension that I think the average person can go like, oh no, I can relate to every one of them. And then from there, we can start to build. And people who want to have greater depth, there's certainly plenty of depth they could go after. But nevertheless, the highest level of tension is called stress. Now, because we're going to talk about flow at some point, I want to make sure that I tell people what the labels are on this axis that matters.
Yes.
Stress occurs whenever you perceive your level of ability to be far less than the situation at hand requires. So you're in a place of great imbalance where the challenge of whatever it is you're doing, again, this is situation specific. This is not about the person. Situation specific. This situation, in their head, they're going like, I don't have the ability to do this. This is impossible.
Yes.
Well, that puts people way up in stress. And there's a whole bunch of very predictable qualities and characteristics that come along with being in stress. So you're being very emotionally ruled, reactive decision-making, perceiving resources as being very limited when they really could be quite abundant. So there's a distortion of reality. It's going, we can talk about each level of tension for hours, and we often do. Coming down grid, the next level of tension is power stress. Power stress is a bit healthier because your ratio of perceived ability against the challenge is better. It's no longer the case that you know nothing. Now you got a little bit of ability to do it. Nevertheless, the challenge is still quite high. So power stress sounds like this. I know I need to do something. I know exactly what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it right now. So this person is in a place of great urgency where they feel as though something needs to be done. I don't have all the ability I wish I had, but whatever I've got, I'm going to put into place. I'm going to do that. And I want to make sure the audience doesn't think this is always negative oriented. When you're up in stress, sometimes it's about one of the most exciting things that could be happening in your life.
You're here.
And so let's say you're in a competitive situation to get a job. And you recognize that you've got the abilities you have, but there's a gap. And someone else seems to have that gap covered, but is missing what you've got. And so you're in a situation, the challenge is quite high, undeniably high, but your level of ability is not quite what you hope it would have been to do this. So what are you going to do? You're going to take whatever skills you have, and you're going to put yourself out there and make your case and whatever it all happens to be, because that sense of urgency is there. And again, the mindset, I know I need to do something. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it right now. Can help me or what?
Got it.
So
Yes.
now, if someone's going to make a change, a lot of changes will occur up there when they, because that's where they're going to go, like, enough, I'm going to do what I can do with what I got. Now, the next level of tension coming down grid is called power. And this is where we're going to get into flow. As I said, we've integrated over 400 models. Flow is certainly one of those models. Now, flow was late to the scene because flow is actually in the 1980s when it became a popular kind of a thing. Obviously, his research predates that, but Csikszentmihalyi kind of hit his heyday when it came to flow, the psychology of optimal experience, which I think was released in the late half of the second half of the 80s. And so it's all good, but a lot of things in our evolution of our model had already happened. And we did see a glimmer of what we now know as the change grid in some of his paragraphs that were setting the stage for what flow is really all about. And so I'll clarify that for people, but I want you to know now is this is where you're going to start hearing some overlap. So power occurs whenever you are in a specific situation where you perceive your ability as being in balance with the challenge. So whatever the challenge is, you've got enough ability to make that happen, and you can have take greater challenges if you've got greater ability. You're always going to be in power. So power is characterized by a person feeling a very high level of self-esteem, a lot of confidence, feeling on purpose, on mission, being deliberate and intentional in their thoughts and their actions. And when you get into that mode, there's a focus that occurs, and that focus can end up often suspending our awareness of the passage of time. Now, if you've studied flow, a lot of what I just said is the descriptions for flow.
I have,
So,
yes.
flow is most definitely a state that exists in power, but it only talks about balance. What happens when you're slightly out of balance? You're no longer in flow. How do I get you back into flow if that's something that you really want to do? So we need to recognize that many, many, many researchers over a great many generations have focused their attention on what we realize is a single element of this big change grid sort of picture. So we thank Csikszentmihalyi for the clarity that he brought because of his emphasis on this flow state, which, by the way, we refer to as being on the heart line of power, a place of perfect balance between perceived ability and perceived challenge. So, yay, thanks so very much. But when you integrate that model, or any model for that matter, with the change grid, we also hope the change grid is going to enhance your understanding of your model. So we're going to bring
Very
stuff to
nice.
you, and you're going to bring stuff to us. It's a merging of brilliance. That's what we really hope to do. Now, the other two levels of tension below power are labeled power apathy and apathy. These occur when your level of ability now exceeds the challenge that the activity represents to you. And again, it's all perceptions. It's all perceptions. I mean,
Sure.
reality, I don't even know exists other than how you perceive it to be. So what's that? Not entirely sure. But nevertheless, it's all
That's
about.
another, that's the next podcast
We'll
interview.
work our way up. So this is a really important thing because we talked before about people not being engaged. Well, apathy is the unavoidable side effect of mastery. So the pursuit of mastery is a wonderful thing, a great developmental experience. The achievement of mastery, kind of overrated. You know, the journey's done. So, okay, fine. You got your degree.
Yeah.
Very nice. We'll throw a party. Okay, now what? Okay. Or you've accomplished this, that, whatever. You made your first million. I don't know whatever it is.
You know.
But okay, now what?
You know, and you're bringing out, and again, I almost sure that the folks watching and listening to this are grasping this idea that that's why humans always want to take it to another level and another level and another level. Because often people say, well, I mean, isn't 20 tennis Grand Slam tournament wins enough, championships enough? And it's not about the number.
Right. No,
it's
no.
The
otherwise,
challenge. What are, it's taking it right. to the next level and
right.
so forth.
Otherwise,
and,
what are all these billionaires doing? It's like,
yeah,
what,
isn't a billion money enough? What, it's not about the money, really. You see, I mean, that's a whole conversation, but yeah. It's such an important understanding for me, and I think others, to understand why it is that those who want to achieve is because that once they get to a certain level, potentially, and you can correct me on this, you know, some level of apathy sets in.
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
Please.
That's right. This is exactly right. And so what we, a rule that you can kind of take to the bank is that it's easier to keep yourself out of apathy than it is to get yourself out of apathy. And this is a big lesson we try to communicate to business leaders, because when it comes to their daily management of others, mm-hmm. certain levels of tension demand that you pay attention to them. So mm-hmm. it is your employees, it is your situations that are way up in stress that are commanding your attention. The rule is people pay attention to where they find their tension. Meanwhile, you've got all these other situations, resources, people, whatever, that are down in apathy. And they're just being not really ignored. There's just nothing left for them
wow.
by the time you're done dealing with all this other stuff that's further upgrid. And so think about, how do these people end up in apathy? Only through a long history of learning everything you wanted them to learn in all the situations that now nothing really challenges them. Everything to them is just another day. It's just another time this occurred.
Wow.
Your most valuable human resources are sitting down in apathy, and they're being ignored because you're all paying attention to where you
wow.
find your attention. So
might
yeah.
this be the reason, I believe it's Apple, it could be Google, but I think it's Apple, that they allow their employees, or maybe their engineers, I don't recall exactly, X percent of time that they can put towards whatever they want to put it
That's
towards
right.
when it comes to innovating or thinking out or doing something
right.
different
Absolutely.
Towards the company, because
Absolutely.
They're attending to this notion that people, you can work inside of this machine, be a cog in the wheel, turn it, but eventually these high-end thinkers and performers want to take things to another level. They want to
That's
get
right.
to that mode where they're like immersed in what they're
Absolutely.
Doing, maybe
Absolutely.
perhaps in the flow state, but we're going to talk about that.
Well, absolutely. And if the management team does not recognize the need for those people to explore things beyond the routine,
mm-hmm. there you go.
Those people may very well take their talents elsewhere.
100%.
And yeah. so mm-hmm. we're talking about retention. So where do I lose people? I don't lose people. Well, how about this? If I lose someone who is up in stress, I don't really know that I lost anything.
Correct, right, that's right.
But if I lose somebody that's down in apathy, that's on me.
Mm.
Okay, they didn't have the apathy when they came to work for the
wow.
company, so where did they get it? They got it from the way they were managed throughout whatever their career happens to be. So business owners, the apathy that's present inside of your organization is, by the way, far greater than the stress that occurs in your organization. Your
wow.
greatest resources are down in apathy, and you're ignoring them.
There you go, so. Leaders. For those of you listening, take that nugget away. That
Absolutely.
Is massive right there. So then there's the fifth one. Did you talk about that yet? The
well, that's power apathy.
Power, which apathy
is, yes. power apathy is a fun one. Power apathy is when you're starting to now lose interest.
Mm-hmm.
Power apathy sounds like this. I know I need to do something. I just wish somebody else would do it. So we say as a joke, but it's true that all forms of housework and yard work fall into power apathy. So the lawn needs to be mowed, the dishes need to be done. But if someone else volunteers to do it, we're gonna feel free, you know? So we're starting to lose our interest in something. And by the way, as I said, it's more difficult to get somebody out of apathy than it is to keep them out of apathy. Watching the early warning signs that someone is in power apathy is essential for a manager, a leader, a coach, to be able to do, because if they intervene then, they don't need to worry about what happens when someone's down in apathy. And by the way, just to give them an example,
Please.
how many companies do you know that say, if you're in the management development program, you're going to be rotating through a lot of different departments, holding a lot of different positions as you advanced in there? Every time they give you a new assignment, a new position, a new location, new whatever, your tension goes up. And so this keeping you in this constant development state, whether the company is doing it for you or you're doing it for yourself, is going to keep you out of apathy.
That's fascinating. And so before we talk about the flow state, I want to bring out one thing that I've often mentioned. I used to talk a lot about performance management inside of organizations, performance goals, and all these other sorts of things. And this may have even dawned on me, T, from learning from you and from the work that I've done from yours, is that. And this would always, and people, just really seasoned leaders would go, oh, wow, why didn't I think of that?
Oh,
And
they
it's
do.
this. And
They do.
I say something like this. So we're talking about performance goals. And I say, just think that, I say, how do you get people to perform? And so I'm just kind of giving you an abstract of it.
Yeah,
And
sure.
they bring up all these other kinds of things. I say, okay, so now imagine that you have a person who's really the ultimate procrastinator. And they are otherwise very talented, and they'll do things once they, once they get close to the deadline, they get to performing. But you're setting up now an annual goal, and so now imagine you write the goal to say that let's say it's January 7th, and you're going to say by the end of the calendar year, December 31st of 2022, you will have accomplished XYZ. And I say to them, if they're the ultimate procrastinator, when do you think they're going to get that done? And they say the obvious, yes, probably days or a month before. And so I say, okay, and this comes straight from you. So how do you encourage this person to get on it earlier? And they're thinking, and some throw out ideas and this, that, and the other. I said, how about just simple milestones? What about if you, and we're talking your stuff here, increasing the tension, right? So that by the first quarter, by March of so and so, you have to have this done. You see, so a couple of things happen. One, you're producing some level of tension for them to start moving on this project. But the other thing is that you actually have something to monitor.
Right, exactly
You know,
right.
you can actually measure whether they're getting there or not, rather than, you hit them up 6, 9 months later, you say, how you doing? They say, well, don't worry about it, I got it.
That's right. That's
It's not
right.
going to work for
Well, and
you.
the thing is that historical data is not all that useful to me. I mean, I need to know data in the moment. If it's going to be history, it's yesterday. I need
That's
to know what's happening now.
right
And that's where you
now.
need to have a change grid. Let me give your audience another thing to think about, particularly when we're talking about productivity and
Please.
engagement. I would imagine that most of the people listening to this are parents. And I would imagine that a great many of them are currently either now or earlier had teenagers.
Yes.
And those teenagers and younger kids nowadays like to play video games. A well-constructed video game is the perfect example of tension management in
Very
action.
interesting.
So whatever the game happens to be, what makes it a good game is that they are constantly working with two different variables. Those variables are the two axes of the change grid, your level of ability to meet a particular challenge. So I'm going to start off at the early stages of the game, giving you little bits of ability. Now, in your experience at that moment, you kind of go like, well, I still got to figure this out. But truth, but based on the scope of the game, I'm giving you very little when it comes to ability. And I'm going to give you a really easy challenge. And knowing fully well that in the early stages, you will be able to effectively use that ability, that tool, that whatever I gave you, in order to meet that challenge. And once you do that, I don't wait for us to have some evaluation a year down the road. I immediately present you with another challenge and another tool. And then I'll do that over and over again as you work your way through hundreds, perhaps thousands of
Of
levels
levels.
to work your way through this game.
Wow.
Yeah. And people don't play it for, you don't sit down and go like, I'll do one level. No.
No.
You get pulled into it, and suddenly you're going like, oh my gosh, hours have passed while I'm playing this game, and all I really want to do is keep playing it, is keep playing it. Well, and talking about flow, what that game successfully did was pulled somebody into a flow experience and maintained them in a flow experience, the constant matching of ability versus challenge. Now, there's a couple of things flow doesn't get
That's
into, at least the early book
fascinating.
doesn't, that does come into play in all this, but fundamentally that's it. So let's just apply, like, how come we can't just gamify all employment? I just say your job as a manager, in fact, the skill we should be looking for when it comes to someone who's a manager, and specifically if they're a leader, they have to know how to present increases in challenge with enough ability to give the people the wherewithal to make it happen. The moment they stop raising the bar about the challenge, the person's going to move downgrade into power apathy or apathy.
Brilliant.
So, or this is often done. It's amazing how often companies don't hesitate to throw money at a problem, thinking that all I really need is give them more
Yep.
resources, in which case the challenge still stayed the same. And now you've increased my ability even more. Guess what? I'm in apathy.
Fascinating. And it's been long said that money is not an incentive. It's a temporary
Now, once your
bump
hygienic needs,
in mindset or something,
Look, once you've got enough, you got
You
enough.
got enough.
From there, people, I mean, I'm not going to object to
Yeah.
people handing me more,
What a
but
fascinating thought though about the whole idea of playing video games. And I can recall, in fact, it wasn't even so long ago that, I've got an Xbox here. I rarely play it. Some young people came over and they saw, oh wow, got X, the new game. Oh, this, oh, you got that, And so I said, yeah, show me a little something. And so they would get on and they would jump immediately, and you could just see them as they're going through like the first levels and trying to teach me a little bit. I wouldn't say that they're bored, but you can just see they're whizzing. They're not really
Yeah,
thinking. They
right.
don't
It's like
care,
been there, done that.
correct.
Yeah.
And then as they start to elevate themselves, you can see their whole demeanor change. That suddenly it's, I mean, the eyes are
Exactly. And
open.
now, add to that that for the longest time, video game experiences were individual. And then they decided, well, let's come up with games that people can form teams, and they're all in their headsets and they're all looking at the screen from their own kind of thing. So not only is a well-crafted video game a perfect example of tension management in action, it's also teaching people teamwork. All
Brilliant.
these principles that the company, having a specific goal, celebrating when the goal has been reached, watching out.
Perseverance, yeah,
Yeah, I mean, come on.
resilience, yes, all of
Exactly
that.
right.
Well, that's
Exactly right.
fascinating.
Exactly right.
Okay, so flow. First
Flow.
of all, and my I've talked I've had a few people on, we've talked a little bit about it, but but really haven't gone into, let's talk about
Right.
flow.
Right. Yeah.
First of all, what is flow? And we should mention Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Csikszentmihalyi.
I don't practice it enough.
Yeah,
He
when I
wrote a
met him,
book called,
Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Yeah.
that's right. And he wrote this book on flow several years ago. He only passed away, I think, a year ago or something.
Yeah,
Is that right?
okay.
So in any event, but let's hear from T. Falcon. What is flow?
Yeah. Well, first of all, flow has been marketed at the consumer level is merely scratching the surface of what his research actually would
Shocking.
involve. And so what I want to make comments on is the flow as the common person understands flow,
Love it.
because I want to make sure that I make it very clear that the understanding of this state that Csikszentmihalyi is talking about represents a tiny fraction of what he actually understands, what they actually got in the kind of thing. So we're only talking about what's he saying. Well, in what's presented to the reader or to the average student is that a flow state occurs whenever you are working on something that is important to you, and it is a situation where the challenge, or they would describe it as difficulty on their axes, meets your level of skill. They don't talk about ability, they talk about skill. Mm-hmm. Ability is knowledge, skill, and experience. So there's a little bit more involved in our definition of ability. Nevertheless, I think he pretty much meant the same thing. He just used the word skill so that people can go like, I know what skill is, I know what difficulty is, I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. And so he said that to experience the true flow state, one needed to be, again, in a situation that mattered to you, and be in a situation where your level of challenge and your level of ability, my words, not his, are being put to the test. Mm. Now, and he describes that as an event. And I can certainly understand why he would describe it as an event, but we believe it describes a wide range of events. And that it is where you are on this range of things that can dictate whether or not your use of that flow state is going to be productive or counterproductive, and the rate at which you're going to achieve whatever it is that you're going to achieve. And so again, yeah, I get it. There needs to be a balance. No argument. And it needs to be something that matters to you, or why are we even talking about it? We need to be talking about something far more fundamental about how you're using your time. Yep.
So T, how would you describe a wide range of events? What's the difference between that and an event?
Yeah. So let's talk about why the word flow helps someone understand what it's all about. So when I think about something flowing, the very first thing that comes to mind for me is water. So water is flowing, it's flowing, it's flowing, it's flowing. I don't know what else really flows. I suppose energy flows, electricity flows. But for the most part, I think when people hear the word flow, they think, you know, blood flow, some fluid is flowing somewhere.
Fluid, yes.
So let's think about water. Now, I'm going to describe a variety of situations where water's movement is going to be involved. Mm. So at all times, the flow requirements are being met. But here goes. So let's say springtime, glorious day, cloud comes by for a few minutes, there's a little afternoon shower, and you go outside and you see that lo and behold, there is water on the ground. It's traveling through the cracks in the sidewalk, and you can actually see the water moving, following whatever path gravity is taking it. Well, Csikszentmihalyi may not describe that state as being a flow state, but the truth is the water is flowing. There's not much water and it's not going with very much intensity, but nevertheless, it is flowing. That's going to be real important by the time I finish my point. Let's now take it up a step. Now, it's really like a big storm and there's like tons of water and it's flowing down. And not only is it cracks in the sidewalk, but that little dry creek bed isn't dry anymore. Mm. So now it's because there's more water. It's moving with more intensity. It found its place. It's still flowing. Nevertheless, that's a higher level of flow, greater challenge, greater ability in order to manage it, et cetera. Now, as we work our way further out here, we're going to sooner or later find ourselves in a nice flowing river. A nice flowing river, you can have some productivity. Sit yourself on a little rubber raft, and I promise you, you're going to go somewhere. Mm. So it's going to take you. So because it's more volume and it's more intensity. Now, if this little principle continues, you would think that the more the intensity is, the more the volume is, the better. Well, what about a tsunami? What about a waterfall? Suddenly it's too much water traveling with too much intensity, even though there still might be that balance perceived that's in there. Well, apply this to the kind of things people are doing in their own life or in a work kind of a setting. And I think it's really important to recognize that there can be people working for your company that don't call any attention to themselves. They're not out there trying to create something new and different. They just want to show up, do what they've been hired to do, do it well, and go home. And that's it. They could very easily be in a flow state. right? Whatever they're doing, they
No,
get
I agree with
lost in
that. I see
doing
what
it,
you're
right?
saying. Yes.
So one of my issues with flow as it's been presented is that it seems to imply a judgment that unless you're doing something, in fact, if you look at the diagram, you have to be using more than 50% ability, tackling more than 50% challenge in order to be in flow, to which I say nonsense. There's a lot of very gentle, quiet situations that people may be in where they get lost in doing it. So, for example, I have a friend named Isabel, and I don't know where she learned all this, no doubt as a young kid, but this gal is the most astounding crocheter I've ever seen. So she's crocheting, okay, one little needle, one little thread, and she's creating. This gal is creating elaborate king-size bedspreads that drape all the way down to the floor, and her hands are flying a mile a minute while she's having a conversation or watching TV. She is in an absolute flow state, losing consciousness of awareness about passage of time. It just keeps going, going, going. So now, in the big scheme of things, is crocheting really all that difficult? I mean, it's one needle and one piece of thread. I don't know how complex can it get? I
Now,
mean,
my
that's
friend, my good friend
pattern.
Deanna may come after you for that, but
Yeah,
go
well,
ahead
because I mean,
on.
you want to make some designs in it, you want to have some texture to it.
Absolutely.
Now there's a we're not just making it an endless chain here. So, all right, so but pardon me. So, but I want to talk about the performance that I think Csikszentmihalyi is really talking about when it comes to flow. And the best way to understand that is an Olympic athlete. So, an Olympic athlete who has done well, who is someone who they suspect has a claim on the podium, will should medal. I mean, they've proven themselves, and here they are at the Olympics with the expectation that they should continue that same thing and do that. In order for them to succeed, they must have the ability necessary to meet that challenge.
That's
The
right.
moment that ability meets that challenge, don't think that that guarantees the outcome. That now gives you a 50-50 chance. Think about that.
Interesting.
You have enough ability to meet the challenge. Well, what if you overestimated your ability or underestimated the challenge by even a slight little bit? Olympic events are sometimes won by thousandths of a second, or whatever the case may be. So, but we'll give you the benefit and say, you're right there. You've got the ability to meet that challenge. Do we believe you have a strong shot at making it happen? Absolutely, as long as something doesn't go awry, something weird doesn't go on. So that's Olympic performance. What do you think happens if that Olympic athlete believes their own PR and suddenly perceives themselves as having more than enough ability to meet this challenge? How might that affect performance when they're now a little more cavalier about what's going
I
on,
see.
right?
Does are we talking that it presents a little more apathy? Are we suggesting
Well,
that?
they're taking some things for granted.
Yes.
They're relaxing on their laurels. Meanwhile, that competitor is here to win.
Yes.
And they know who they're up against, and they're not underestimating anything about
Yes.
your ability. And so, what usually makes the difference between winning and losing is some silly little mistake or some great little advantage that
Yes.
appeared at the last minute. One stroke done a little bit
This
better than
is
someone, right?
fascinating what you're saying because I have been. I love watching track and field, primarily the running, the dashes, the 60 meters, 100 meters, whatever. And I'm not that I guess a skilled watcher, but I just enjoy what we're talking about here. Really, is this level of competitiveness and of skill
That's
and
right.
ability. And so part of what you're talking about, and I start paying attention to after I learned a little bit about this, I started paying attention to how fast they get off the mark.
How
And
exactly?
that little bitty mistake that we would not even notice
Right.
is all it took for them to lose.
Exactly right. And or something like, when they're all in their own lanes, the further outside they are, the longer the
Yes.
run is.
Yes.
So are they shifting to the inside fast enough to do that? So there's all
Yes.
these different variables, but the one that's really going to undermine them is if they believe that their ability is greater than this challenge is going to require. That's going to give them some bravado, and with bravado comes carelessness because they're
Very
not paying
interesting. I see.
attention. On
Yes.
the other hand, if someone believes that the challenge is actually greater than it is, they're going to attack it with a nervousness. The confidence isn't quite where it really should be. And so this is what we're managing in sports psychology, particularly. How can we get this person to really feel this balance? So now the activity flows beautifully. Now, to understand the dark side of flow, I'm wondering how many of your business owners, managers, leaders, whatever, have ever had an employee who believed that the sun rose and set in them, who believed they had far greater abilities than anyone has ever had, who believed that you should count your blessings that they show up at work on the day. So they have this grandiose idea about what their level of ability is. And so they decide to go after possibilities, challenges, far greater than what they're really ready to do,
Oh
or more
my.
accurately, what the company is ready to risk.
Wow.
So the problem with being too far flow, where it becomes a tsunami, is that these employees often create policy on the fly purely to get the deal.
Oh, got it.
Right? And so they're going to come back and say, hey, I brought you the business. Now you got to do whatever you got to do to deliver on what I promised to them.
Wow.
They don't believe that the rules apply to them. And so, and probably because the rules haven't applied to them for a long time. And so they've been pushing, 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 pushing. And unfortunately, as they're doing this outside movement, they could be moving the organization into harm's way. And so
That is
now what?
fascinating.
Now what? Yeah.
Let me ask you about this, and this is going to come out. We're kind of go back to the sports because I think it's at least one place that I recognize, and whether other people recognize this concept that you're talking about, flow or the flow state, they've seen it many times if they watch any sports or even musicianships, but basically performance, if you will. So I noticed that, for instance, I watch a lot of tennis. And the highest level of tennis players, they all have these routines that they do before, during a match. I'll give you an example. Djokovic and others I see have followed his way, but he's the first one that I realized doing this, that when he's waiting to be served the ball, he's moving a certain motion and his eyes are always shifting like this. And I maintain, but I'm asking, is he trying to keep that rhythm going that gives him, he's in the flow state. Is he trying to either push himself into that flow state or is he trying to maintain that flow state? The other ones are athletes, of course, runners that are doing these little routines beforehand. They're focused or they're doing certain movements and always trying to, they're busy almost.
Yeah,
What
right.
do you
And
say
so
about that, I guess, is really
I
my
can explain that
question.
from a flow perspective and from
Please.
attention management perspective. So
Okay.
the first thing is that they're staying in motion because remember, one of the elements that contributes to the level of tension you're experiencing is physical activity.
Interesting.
So if I want to keep myself, ready for the, it's good to do that. Like you're a professional speaker, before you step on stage, you do a little bit of a shake awake, you
Yes,
got to
that's
get,
right.
yeah.
Yeah,
So
I'm
this is
not just
all.
chilling in a chair somewhere.
No. So there is a tension management element that's going on there. But let's talk
Interesting.
about flow for just a second. When I think about flow, again, going back to water, I think about things that can interfere with water flowing.
Love it.
So now we've gone on a Panama Canal cruise, and when they start to close those gates in their, process of raising and lowering levels, blah, 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 whatever
The locks
it
or
is,
whatever, yeah.
yeah. Watch the video if you go to the Panama Canal. It really is enlightening. So anyway, well, when they start to close this and the water starts to rise, you see a turbulence that's going on. This water wants to flow, and
I
you're
see.
trapping it. And so it's looking for a way to get around it. It's
Wow.
shifting this way and that way. It's trying to find its way back into flow. So I think that's also happening
Very
when
interesting.
someone is in the flow state and they've been pulled out of it for whatever reasons.
Yes.
In order to get back into it, there's going to be this chaos. I'll give you an example from my own life. I like to think of myself as being a decent writer. I've certainly read people that I thought were better than I am and seem to enjoy it, which I don't really enjoy the writing, blah, blah, blah. It's from my
You
own
are a
life.
good writer,
So for
yes.
me, to get into that frame of mind to write is not something that's readily available to me.
Okay.
So only under certain great circumstances can I get into that mode. And once I'm in that mode, it's really important that I be allowed to stay in that mode, because if you pull me out of it could be a long time before I'm back into it. And so when my wife Linda and I first started working together, I would always say to her, if the door is closed, don't knock, don't call, don't do anything at all. Just I'll let you, when I come out, you can do whatever needs to be done. Because in all likelihood, what I'm doing is writing. And that little quick interruption, just a quick question,
Yes.
can completely derail me.
Yes.
And I know it's not just me. I know everybody. When you get in that flow state, you start to become highly sensitive to anything that pulls you out of it.
That's right,
And
right.
so you may respond to that action of being pulled out of your flow state with, I mean, it's disruptive. It might feel threatening. It might go, ah, you know, but this is all really what's going on with the tennis player as well, you know,
Yes,
their
physiologically and
absolutely.
neurology wise, there's things happening in your brain
That's
that,
right.
endorphins, whatever it is, that
Yep,
start to
yep, yep,
happen.
yep, yep.
So we're probably, speaking of flow state, I kind of feel like we might have been there, and because I have no idea how long we've been going here, but I suspect we're right at the end of our time, and I want to pick
All
this
right.
up again. But a couple of quick things, though. So, how might you suggest, this is going to be a tough question, T, the average person begin to explore flow, and maybe people know about it, or how they can, how they can help themselves enter more into a flow state. I'll just leave the question at that and
Yeah,
hope that you
I would
can.
say that the best thing for people to do right now is to visit our YouTube channel. The
I would
easiest way
agree
to get to
too.
the YouTube channel is to go to YouTube and do a search for ChangeWorks system.
Yes.
ChangeWorks, not just ChangeWorks, because there are a couple of other things that'll pop up. We, by the way, hold the federally registered trademark for ChangeWorks. So we could send a note to all these people
And
saying,
cease and
no,
desist.
but
Yes, right.
we're ChangeWorks system.
Yes.
So go ahead and go there. Just do a little query for ChangeWorks system. You'll see a little shell shaped little illustration with five level wedges. That's the change grid. We just turned it around. So there, your audience are going to find two things in particular. If you want to learn ChangeWorks, right now, all of the lessons are up and you can access them for free. Now, it's hours and hours worth of stuff, but nevertheless, it's up there and it's free. So feel free to go do it. Do start off with the mastering personal change lessons before you get into this is everything a certified coach has to learn. Now, sooner or later, those lessons aren't going to be up there because what we've done is we've retired now and thinking about what do I want to do with my life's work. I want to kind of put it all out there on the internet so that it can have a lifetime long beyond my own. And so I'm in this process of putting all this together. And so sooner or later, things have to be shifted around. So that's number one. Look for the green videos and you'll see the different lessons. Just start at mastering personal change and you're good to go. Now, the other thing though is that because I'm imagining a lot of your audience members are in the human services, human development industry, one way or another, in business or out on their own, whatever. I'm also going to tell them that every Tuesday and Thursday, we do a webinar called the Circle of Brilliance. And the Circle of Brilliance is just a bunch of people from all different kinds of backgrounds who are in this kind of field of work, and we get together and have a wonderful little conversation. Well, those are all the purple videos. So if you see all these purple videos, all the purple videos are the recordings of the Circle of Brilliance. There's about 150 hours of Circle of Brilliance calls already up there, but several of them are specifically about flow.
Yes,
And so
I've
I
seen
think
them.
it's 6 or 7 hours just discussing flow. So listen to hour
Go
one.
there.
And you can, it's all up there, it's all free. So,
You know, I want to accentuate that because I have followed you for many years, and I don't get on Circle of Brilliance calls, but I watch, what you have put out there. And I mean, I'm talking to my audience now. What T has put out there is, it's really amazing. And grab it while you can. It's so good each and every time. I just walk away, and others will walk away going, wow, what? I get to watch this for
Well,
free.
they need to know what our company's motto is. Our motto
Yes.
has always been, "The insight's so valuable, we think everyone should know." And so there are certain levels of it. If we're going to be talking about licensing people and all that, well, then there's some hoops people have to jump through. There's some training they have to complete. But when it comes to an individual who's just trying to learn a little bit more about themselves, we see no reason to hesitate doing that. And the nice thing, before people think that that he's just giving it all away, you have to understand how a YouTube channel works. We do get
I
compensated for
do. I understand that.
all that. So the
Yes,
more people
yes,
that are watching it, it's
yes, yes.
subscribe to the channel. That helps a
That
lot.
helps a lot.
So,
Yes,
yeah, subscribe for sure, but watching them, please
yes,
feel free,
yes.
watch them all.
But there's no hype there. It's not going to say I leaped a 10,000-foot building, and then you go, okay, it really wasn't 10,000 feet. No, you deliver the goods, and you should be compensated for it. But nonetheless, it's free to the person showing up. So T, and beyond that, I'd just like to ask, how can people find you, reach out to you? What's the best way?
Sure,
All of
sure,
that.
sure, sure. We are migrating the websites over the course of these many years. We've probably had a good half a dozen different websites that we keep posting videos up to and all that. So the truth is that at a certain point, every one of our websites becomes a giant file cabinet, and that makes it increasingly difficult for people to find stuff. And so once in a while, we just kind of go like, let's just go back to scratch and go from there. And so if people want to find out more about us, the most recent website would be at changeworksystem.com. Changeworks
Works
system,
system.
that's two S's in a row, changeworksystem.com.
Okay.
And there they'll find all kinds of stuff they can
And
look
all
at,
of that'll be
contact
in the show notes,
information.
but I just want to be able to
Yeah,
let people
yep.
hear that. So listen, let me save you and save me and ask you, say, at least say, say something nice about Linda. She's an amazing person,
Oh,
but we
yeah.
go through this whole thing and don't mention her name. You're
Yeah,
really the
no.
one in trouble, not me.
Yeah, well, and here's the
I'm
thing
just
is that,
kidding.
we all hope that in our life we're going to meet the one, the right partner to be with and all that sort of stuff. And so I actually got to a point in life where I thought it was never going to happen. And Linda was at the same point in her own life. And the moment you say to the universe, I guess I'm never going to get married, something happens.
That's right.
And so Linda appeared in my life. She started out as one of my clients, became a student of it, and then decided that we were going to work together on the business side of things. And then we fell in love and got married. So she
Amazing.
was actually a
I didn't know
student
that
first, a
actually, yeah.
business partner. Yeah. And the great thing about Linda is that she runs the business. I'm only allowed to call myself the president or whatever. And back in the days, we're mostly retired now, but back in the days when we had a big staff and offices and all that sort of a thing, there was no doubt about it. Linda was the one who ran the show. So I don't mind making this true confession. I was the kind of consultant and speaker who would make all of my clients sign a contract that said that they had to pay the invoice within 10 days if it was on expenses, within 30 days if it was my speaking fee or whatever. And then I never got around to billing them for like 6 months. So Linda came along and said, no. So most definitely we were able to achieve the level of success we did, not because of the content that I've created, but because of Linda running the company and being my gal for all these years. So
Well,
yeah.
yes, she's a terrific person, terrific, terrific professional. But beyond that, you're both just wonderful people. You give a lot. You always add way more value. And I hope people look you up and get to know you more. Show up to some of your Circle of Brilliance seminars.
Love to have
And
them. Love to have
yes,
them.
it's really terrific. T, I cannot thank you enough for spending this time. I'm not going to say such a long goodbye because I'll be bugging you again for another interview
Please do. I'd
on
love to
another
talk more.
subject, so,
Yeah,
but thank
yeah.
you so much for taking the time to be on Grow Yourself.
Happy to do that. Thank you
Okay.
so much.
God bless.